Yeah, the wording in line 18, which requires the coverage to be a condition of obtaining and retaining the license, codifies the current administrative position of the Bureau. Our current position is that no license will be issued to a forced labor contractor until we have proof of workers' compensation insurance coverage. And I've attached our administrative rules there for you to see. We have indicated in our rules that failure to maintain such coverage is a violation of this section of the law, and that the Bureau considers it such a serious violation that license revocation proceedings will be pursued. We believe that our administrative position reflects the legislative intent and that the proposed wording will indicate as much. And what we're trying to do here, as we've said earlier, is to forestall any legal arguments at a later date.
Well, the only thing is you can't backfill with an administrative rule what you've taken out of a statute. I mean, the administrative rule, as you know, is only as good as it's got statutory authority to back it up.
Senator Hendrickson, members of the committee, I understand your concern, yeah. And I'm
I realize you're relying on your counsel's advice. I guess maybe I want to talk to ours.
Sure.
We want to make sure that we are indeed doing what we're attempting to do.
Like most portions of the worker comp statute, this has a long history to it, as I understand it. So what you're really trying to get at is you want them just to come in with their insurance coverage rather than you having to make some interpretations of who is covered under the law.
That's correct, Senator. We don't want to be put in a position any longer of trying to interpret the workers' compensation laws.
Well, is that, in other words, if someone says, well, we've got a cooperative, we don't need to have it, you don't want to have to?
Well, we just don't want to have to try and interpret another agency's laws. I think Paul could probably
tell you. Well, what if someone comes in and says, well, we're all partners, we're all independent contractors here, and so we don't, and here's our coverage for our two employees. We have 50, but they're all, the other ones are not really.
Madam Chairman, that is precisely the problem we ran into.
Would you just accept it for the two and say, fine, go to it, or?
What happened in that particular case is that we have insurance companies, and it's Safe itself, in some cases, telling us that they couldn't sell partnerships. When only the only people who are involved in the partnership were the partners themselves, they couldn't sell them workers' compensation insurance because of the workers' compensation law itself that excludes them as subject workers. Okay, it was only after discussing this issue at quite a bit of length, not only with our own attorney general, but with the workers' compensation's attorney general, that in fact everybody can buy workers' compensation insurance regardless of your business entity or anything else. It was at that point, it took us a long time to try and finally get to that. But at that point, we were forced to do some interpretation of what this language meant. And what we knew what the intent was, and that was that everybody's going to have workers' compensation insurance. Mm-hmm. Okay. But in order for us to do that, we had to go into the workers' compensation law itself. Mm-hmm. So if whatever wording we come up with, if this isn't satisfactory, or if some other wording, we don't. Well, our main objective is to have workers' compensation insurance people interpret their statute and us interpret ours.
Well, I guess I have no objection to you wanting to do that. I just want to make sure that when we remove this language from the statute, as this bill is proposing, that we're not doing anything more, that we're not changing the substantive part of the law with respect to this area, because I know in the past it's been a very controversial area. And if there's some other portion of the worker comp law that covers this, that's fine. I just want to know for my own self before I'll be voting.
Senator Hendrickson, I'm sure we could provide you with a draft of what we were originally proposing, if that would be helpful.
I'm going to do is ask that we get an opinion from our legislative council. I just want to. Okay. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on any of these three bills? 39, 40, when I see Anita Paulson is in the case, she wishes to testify.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Anita Paulson. I'm an attorney with Oregon Legal Services. and for the past 6 years, you've heard me come and talk to you about farm labor contractors. Besides the Bureau of Labor, or Legal Aid is about the only other organization that's been actively involved with the enforcement of this law and the development of this law. I would encourage you to help the Bureau of Labor enter into these reciprocal agreements for enforcement of the farm labor contractor law.
You're talking on Senate Bill 40 now, right?
On Senate Bill 40 first. It's Woodburn, for example, is sort of a hub of reforestation contracting activity, and we have a two-attorney office in Woodburn, and they do a great deal of this reforestation contractor work. Oftentimes, contractors will come from Washington, recruit here in Oregon, take the workers back to Washington. Washington doesn't have a bond. And for example, we have a $26,000 judgment against Raimundo and Carmela Contreras that we have been able to recover for 8 workers. And if we had some more efficient reciprocity agreements between the two states, we might be able to do a better job of representing these workers. Last September, I got a call actually from the Washington legislature and asked me to come and talk to them about some of the problems we've been seeing. They do not have a Farm Labor Contractor Act. I'm not sure exactly where they are in the hearing process, but when we started working on this and the Bureau of Labor started going after people and getting them registered, the list of registered contractors in the state was like about a page and a half long. And I think you just heard Paul Tiffany say they had over 400. I mean, it's a very underground sort of business, and the licensing laws and the work that the Oregon legislature has done has been bringing it more and more to the surface. It is a very big business, and if we can do anything to cooperate between the states, I think that it would be a big help.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear the state of Washington is using this Senate Bill 525 as a model for their Senator Hamby, then Senator Cole.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Anita, what other states, neighboring states, are there that have current language that somewhat mirrors ours in the way of reciprocity?
We're the only ones, so far, but Washington is considering.
And Idaho, California, are they considering any kind of similar language?
Not that I know of. Actually, the biggest problems we've had with exchanges have been between Oregon and Washington, because they're agricultural contractors along the Columbia, and they go back and forth between Walla Walla and Hood River and Pendleton. There's a lot of labor contracting and activity around Ontario, but I really don't know of any big problems there. That doesn't mean that they aren't there, but I just couldn't tell you. But with the big, and then of course we don't have any legal services office along the California-Oregon border, so if there are problems there, I wouldn't know about them.
Senator McCoy?
Yeah, that was the same question I was going to ask, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. You had signed up for all three bills.
Sure.
Do you want to give us some?
Actually, about 195. I think that our concern was just especially in reforestation that they do provide some evidence of coverage, that there is coverage, and I'm not really sure if this does the job too, and I'd be glad to work with the committee.
I would appreciate your giving us an analysis too. I just feel a little uncomfortable, at least today, moving that one with all that language taken away.
You're with Legal Aid. What is the function of Legal Aid?
We have a farm worker office in Woodburn, and we handle a large number of cases under the Oregon Farm Labor Contractor Act with unpaid wages and the like. Most of our clients
represent the farm worker that comes to you that what?
Wasn't paid. It's very common that...
But is that the Department of Labor and Industry?
Well, it's a real problem in that there's a real shortage of Spanish-speaking lawyers in this state. There's a lot of people will not go to what they perceive to be a state agency. They're afraid to go to the state agency. They're afraid that their claim will get lost. But it's a very big problem.
And how are you funded?
part of our money is federal.
What's the other part?
There's money that's paid from filing fees. There's money
paid by whom? Paid by the
litigants.
Private litigants, yes.
Okay. And go through the funding for me.
Most of our money comes from federal dollars. There is funding that comes from the filing fees in lawsuits that are filed in the state. We get money from lawyers' trust fund accounts because it's considered unethical for lawyers to profit off the interest that's generated by trust accounts, and because that money is held for such a short period of time, lawyers through a voluntary process have that money go to a private foundation that's administered by the bar, and the bar in turn turns that money back, and then from private donations.
Okay, and your primary function is to represent indigents, is that it?
We represent indigents in civil matters only.
And a secondary thing is you lobby for bills.
We represent clients, yes, on legislation.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I would like to address a comment or two to Senate Bill 39.
Okay.
I worked with the Labor Contractor Act for a very long time, and at line 20, I'm not really quite sure what they're trying to get at.
Mm-hmm. Senate Bill 39?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to go over the testimony because I was most concerned with the language at line 24, which deals with the labor exchanges. The Farm Labor Contractor Act is to guarantee that people that are working in the business, when they're transporting workers back and forth, for example, that they have adequate insurance, and that workers know where they're going to be working and have some idea about how long they're working and the like.
I don't think you were here when the testimony was given.
No.
I'll just clarify. We were told that this is only for neighbors who might be
mm-hmm.
helping each other out on a woodlot, and it is not at all to deal with farm labor.
Well, I think it,
when that language
Act,
does that,
I think it perhaps is overbroad. One situation that we see a great deal of in Washington County is that farmers exchange crews regularly, and it seems to me that this language fits exactly into those labor exchanges.
Oh, you're saying by saying exchanging labor, they could be exchanging workers.
That's right.
Not their own individual labor.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And Senator McCoy was questioning
yes.
that point before you came in.
That's right. This didn't seem right.
Okay, well, we can probably find some language to get that cleaned up. Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on these three bills? Come forward, please. Morning, Dick.
Morning.
You're just here on 39, is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Richard Angstrom, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'm appearing here today in support of Senate Bill 39, particularly lines 20 through 23. And that is the area that allows a father-son, father and two sons, or couple
daughters
of brothers to go out within the family and do some particular work for us. And the reason that this is very important is a lot of areas we have miscellaneous small tracts that are located out alone. It's very difficult to get somebody in, so it makes it very convenient to ask a farmer or a small entrepreneur to come in and do a relatively small project. Based on our experience and the review with our forestry committee, that these people do not become involved in the larger job simply because there's a lot of competition for them, but rather they feel that little boy or a job is really too small to do by any other group. And so we strongly support this. We've ran into some problems and excessive cost in some instances bringing people in because of the apparent lack in the law right now, the department to have the authority to grant an exemption for this small team of relationships to come in and do something. And again, I repeat, really this generally applies to a farmer who is located in the area, or a gypo logger who just does some small logging on his own, to come in and do some reforestation work for us. Madam Chairman, or Chairperson, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Thank you. Senator McCoy?
Yes. Dick, do you know of any cases where they have extended the definition of family to include anything other than the immediate family?
Senator McCoy, in all sincerity, I really don't know, but I have never heard of it, but I'm not certainly an expert on what they've identified that for. Certainly, when we talk about the family, we're talking about a father-son or a grandfather-son or, you know, that type of thing.
Not extended family.
Not to the cousins and third cousins and all that.
Right. I was wondering, Senator McCoy,
the rule as defined by the Labor Commissioner, I wonder if you have a copy and the definition for what...
We can get a copy of that.
The immediate family as defined by the Labor Commissioner.
Senator McCoy, we do not have that defined as yet. The immediate family is not defined in the rule. And not at this point.
I can understand Senator McCoy's concern because you could have a situation where you could bring on an extended family kind of situation, which is certainly not, I don't think, what we have.
Beginning to be quite common now in contracts.
The interesting thing about this section is that for people to get started, oftentimes in reforestation, they do start out small. And we found from the industry visiting with the people who work with us in reforestation that many, many of our tree planting contractor type people start out with that immediate family. They work together for a little bit, then they grow, and then they start hiring people. At that point, certainly they've got to come over the law. But without this in there, there's a real question, and we've seen some fall off in the terms of new people coming into the program in terms of starting as a small family business.
I don't think there's probably anybody that has any objection to that. I think what we're trying to avoid is a situation in which, and particularly this, as you know, the whole bill originated from the problems of undocumented workers undercutting the reforestation industry here and the problems intended in terms of the exploitation of those workers. So what we're trying to do is we want to deal with the immediate family situation, but we don't want to leave a loophole so that you can have a situation where you could be using that particular provision to evade the law, saying you've got extended family members.
And we would be in agreement with that.
Yeah. I was wondering also,
Madam Chair, I would like to clarify my previous statement. We do refer in our rules, okay, if you look on page 4 of our rules, items 15 and 16, down at the bottom of page 4 in the right and left hand column, you'll see an individual performs work in connection with a particular contract and on we're talking about an individual. We're exempting that person as long as he does everything himself or herself.
I think I asked you about the individual before.
16, well, we didn't really define the individual as a person, we just said an individual. Okay. Mm-hmm. 16 says the spouse, son, daughter, brother, sister, mother, or father of the individual. So what we did in Senate Bill 39 was to take items 15 and 16 and put them together into one exemption. We say an individual does the work by himself or with the immediate family, okay. We didn't really say this is his immediate family, so if you ask me for a definition, I technically say no, there isn't, but this is what we intend the immediate family to be. And certainly we could write this in. It wouldn't be any problem with it.
Okay, maybe let's see if we have any more questions for Mr. Engstrom.
I want to predict, but not concerning that language, concerning lines 24 and 25.
Okay.
Do you have a bill in front of you?
Yes, I do.
How do you interpret that? Can that be an exchange of employees, or are we talking only about...
I think, frankly, Senator Starkovich, that Anita, when she went through this, did raise a valid question that maybe it could be interpreted that way. Certainly there's a lot of merit to that, there's a lot of ways we exchange work, particularly when it comes to things like fire trails. You know, we'll have somebody up there and construct this fire trail, and in lieu we'll do this for you over there, and it's not employees, and so we would want to be sure that her point was covered on that, I think.
Okay, thank you, appreciate that.
I have another question for Paul.
Okay, before Dick leaves, I have a question for him. As long as you're here, I know you're not testifying on Senate Bill 195, but I have a hunch you maybe have some background on the history of that language that they're proposing to delete. Do you have a copy of that bill?
Let me just turn.
I don't know if you were involved in all that.
I've been following it for many years.
Controversy over past years, but do you have any thoughts on that in terms of that?
I think it's a very reasonable request to ensure that the department has that, that authority to request a certification for that. And that also does a little subtle thing, is it gives them the ability, as I see it, as a department to kind of follow who's in the field and one more little check, so that we don't have some operator out there violating the whole law. So I think it's important.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts about the language that's being deleted with respect to... that language was put in to ensure that regardless of what the business form was called, the individuals involved would have to work for compensation. And I don't know if you were involved in the past controversies over that.
Not. I sat in on them. Normally we were not involved. I don't have any problems with the deletion of that language, simply because I think once they implement the new language, that they have plenty of authority to cover what's been deleted, and they'll probably develop a few rules that may even go a little farther. That would be my gut reaction.
Okay.
But again, we haven't reviewed that internally. That's just my personal comments,
okay.
Senator.
Thank you. I appreciate you for sharing that. Any other questions for Mr. Engstrom? Thank you
very
much. Okay, Paul, maybe you would like to come back, you and Marilyn. Senator Starkus, did you have a...
Right. In Senate Bill 39, I noticed this in a few other bills as well. We're taking what is currently administrative rule and putting it into statute. Why are you asking this?
Senator Starkovich, Senator Hendrickson, the reason we're doing this is on the advice of our Attorney General. We tried to do it under administrative rules as a result of all the hearings and publicity. There were a lot of folks out there that, frankly, we didn't know they were out there, and they didn't know they were covered. And after the hearings, we found out that some of these folks probably shouldn't be, and we couldn't do it. The AG felt that it would be questionable to try and do it by rule, and so it's at the advice of our Attorney General that we're trying to put this in statute to make sure that there's no legal ambiguity.
So there's a question as to whether certain of your existing rules have statutory authority, and we're trying to put language in statute.
In these three particular ones, yes. Not in the others, but in these three particular ones, we felt that that we had to do it by statute rather than by rule.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on these bills? Senate Bill 39, 40, 195. Hearing and seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and have a work session. We'll be back in order. We do have to be in session at 10, so we need to move along here and see. Yeah, session's at 10.
We'll learn something.
A little surprise from anyone. So let's, we'll have to adjourn at 10, so let's proceed into work session and find out what the pleasure of the committee is with respect to these bills. I would like to say, with respect to 195, I would like to reserve that for a later work session until we get, I would like an opinion from our legislative council with respect to the substantive language that we're removing. I just want to be assured that we, by removing that, I have no problems with the concept of having to present insurance, but I want to make sure that the language we're deleting is not something substantive. So if there's no objection to that, I'd like to hold that one over. I have asked Anita Paulson, who I'd asked to come and testify about these bills, to see if she'd work on some language on that problem with labor exchange, to see if we can refine that language so we don't have a loophole there. I don't know. Do you have some proposed language for that? Or?
Senator Hendrickson, we are going to confer with Anita this afternoon on that. On that, and see if we can't come up with some language that does the job for both of us.
Okay, so I think we could start on Senate Bill 40. It appears that one just needs an amendment on in the summary clause, and the chair would move that the, in Senate Bill 40, that the words Commissioner of Labor and Bureau of Labor and Industries be deleted, and the word statute put in its place. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, that will be so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
I would move that the renewal fees for a license be amended to read $25 instead of $100.
Okay, do you want to speak to that motion?
The justification that was given by staff on the fee is that they had the equal type of investigation because of the license. If you remember, when those that were on the labor, we went through a little bit of discussion on why the $100 fee. They basically said that they had prior investigations to see whether they were properly a corporation or properly an individual or a partnership, and that that all of those relationships were there. One of the things you do on a renewal is when they say they have to investigate insurance and workman's compensation and all the other data that they require, the person making the renewal has to do that. They go with the workman's comp department and get a certificate from them saying that they now have workman's compensation. They ask for insurance on the vehicle. They said another one. You have to produce those documents for review by their staff. So it's a matter of a clerical thing with everything sitting in front of them. They've gone through the prior investigation, and I see really no justification in the going through the same procedure that you did when you had a an investigation. I'll put that way, license.
Okay, thank you. Senator McCoy.
Yes, Madam Chair, despite what has been said, all of those things still have to be verified.
They're verified when you get the certificate.
So it means, no?
Well, yeah. Let's just, for the order in the meeting, Senator McCoy has the floor.
Madam Chair, the other point is, I mean, where does the $25 come from? I mean, is that just something?
Well, these are, I don't know, these fees
off the top of the head, or is it really worked out? Because at least something has to be done. Else you wouldn't have even spent
$25. Are you putting a question to Senator Howe?
Yes.
Okay, Senator Howe.
Well, Madam Chair, the $25 comes from an inflation over the $20 fee that now could be or is now in contention be charged. And saying basically that the renewal is definitely going to take time. It's not going to take time of the original investigation. The $100 fee was fed and justified last session. And so a portion of that, it was my rationale in the in the renewal fee. What we have to remember, or what we should try to remember here, that the fees set here are should be based on some reason, because it becomes another form of taxation. You're asking here that a renewal fee be increased more than 150% here, and I just don't think there's justification to do it.
Madam Chair.
Senator McCoy.
Yes, my concern about the whole thing is in Section 2, in Section 1, Paragraph 2, the license shall be renewed each year upon payment in advance of the required fees, so forth. But the commissioner may require any person seeking renewal to file a new application and may conduct a new investigation as to the applicant's character, competence, and reliability, and all those things. So that, and things are changing so fast in this area, that it might necessitate every time you renew your license to have a new investigation because of the problems inherent in this kind of work.
Okay, so you're speaking against the motion?
Yes, I'm speaking against the motion, and I would like to see it remain as...
Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Hannity.
I wonder if we could question and clarify perhaps the frequency that organizations or change, so to speak. In other words, how frequently does an individual move, a contractor move from a partnership 1 year to an incorporation of another year or what have you? And is there a need then, in fact, to investigate the that particular variable?
Senator Hendrickson, Senator Hamby. One of the reasons that 525 passed last session was to address these abuses of the people moving around from partnership to partnership and doing business under assumed names in one partnership or one business and then moving on within a matter of months to do business under a new assumed name, creating abuses, the same people taking the same abuses to different companies. And I'd like to have Paul talk about that because he's really familiar with probably the frequency and the longevity of them.
Madam Chair.
Wait a second. Now, Senator Hamby has a question here. Do you want more information?
Well, yes.
Okay, why don't we ask Paul to address Senator Hamby's question, and then we'll take Senator Otto.
Because if, in fact, it takes that kind of a check for a renewal license, then perhaps there may be a need to go beyond.